Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Wednesday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in our good friend from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Great. Basketball is amazing. We're headed towards the playoffs, and I am so ready.
We have talked about the Lakers, obviously, a lot this season. They are one of our signature teams here in our region of the Sporting Tribune, Southern California, Las Vegas, Hawaii. And there have been moments this season, Grant, where they have showed us glimpses of what we thought they could be this season, whether it was, a big road win against the Warriors or a victory over the Celtics. I mean, again, you go down the list of some of the victories that they've had. The one that they had last night when they find themselves down 20 points on the road in Milwaukee to a Bucks team that's finding their groove. And no LeBron James. I mean, that should be the headline right there. So no LeBron James on the road, down 19 or 20. And they come back and they win in double overtime. It's a word that you like to use a lot. It's moxie. And this team has showed it time and time again, which is why I feel that if they go on some kind of run here, And I don't even mind if they're in the play-in tournament. What I like is they're now basically, effectively two back of that 6, 7, 8 seed. So obviously their dream scenario is they're the 6th seed and they don't have to be in that play-in tournament. But even if they move up from where they are, and they've now established enough distance between them and the Warriors to a certain degree, 2.5 games. But their goal is the 6th seed at this point, and if they're the 7th seed, at least they'll have home court, and maybe they only have to play one play-in tournament game. But again, that's big picture. Focusing in on this game against the Milwaukee Bucks on the road, no LeBron James, and we've seen this before. When the Lakers beat the Milwaukee Bucks a few weeks ago in Los Angeles, once again, no LeBron James, D'Angelo Russell was the one who went off. In this particular one, a player that we felt for some time could be that guy for the Lakers, the guy who was going to maybe, get the reins of this team and be the superstar moving forward, was Anthony Davis. And for him, 52 minutes, by the way. I mean, really kudos to him. D'Angelo Russell also went for played 50 minutes in this game. But 34 points, Grant, 23 rebounds. Your thoughts on the Lakers coming back without LeBron James and beating the Milwaukee Bucks on the road in double overtime?
Yeah, they beat him twice now without LeBron on the season, which is crazy. LeBron didn't play in either of the Bucks games, and they won both of them in overtime or double overtime. This team, Arash, I don't know if you remember, but when the Clippers and Lakers played last, when the Clippers blew that 21-point lead, and I was talking about how there's just a certain type of urgency and a certain type of calm that the Lakers have that the Clippers did not. And this is why I say that. It's times like this where the Lakers were down big again in the fourth quarter. And what did they do? They pulled it out of their hat. They just kept grinding. They kept doing what, you know, honestly got them to be in the stretch, right? They've been playing great basketball as of late, up there with the Houston Rockets and up there with the top four teams, some of the best basketball in the West. So am I surprised by this? Kinda, yes, because they were down 19 and 20 and it looked like Anthony Davis hurt his knee again. And then he just willed his way. Arash, you mentioned he had 51 minutes or 52 minutes, whatever it was. That Anthony Davis we haven't seen in years past. If this was 2021 or 2022, Anthony Davis would be in the locker room and not playing.
Yeah.
He's playing through these minor injuries. And look, he had 34 points and 23 rebounds. And that is insane. I know people are going to look at his efficiency and say, oh, well, he was 12 of 31. At one point, he was 7 of 23, right? But with Anthony Davis, he always has the ability to be a game changer, whether it's on the defensive end, whether it's on the rebounding side. He had 4 blocks in this game. He was a menace down the stretch in both overtimes with his defense. He was all over the place, even on that bad knee. And what can we say about Austin Reeves, right? His second career triple-double, 29 points, 14 rebounds, 10 assists on excellent efficiency. He had a clutch three in the second overtime to get them to 124 to 121. It was basically the dagger to win the game. And this team, they know how to play with each other when it gets tough. And, you know, this is exactly why I said, you know, if the Lakers can go on a run here, if I can see some consistency, which I have now, I really believe that if they go and play a team, and look, I think the Mavericks, they won last night. They're going to beat the Kings. They had a big win over the Kings. That was a 6-7 matchup there. So the Mavericks blew out the Kings. So that kind of helps the Lakers a little bit because it pushes the Kings a little bit far back. And obviously, Laker fans don't want to see the Kings, obviously. But, you know, anytime you can inch closer and up into that 7-8 matchup, that you always want to take that. I know that, you know, there's a lot of people that are saying, oh, let's get to the 6, let's get to the 5. I think right now, ideally, if you get to that 7-8 game and you have 2 chances to get into the playoffs, I think that's still ideal for the Lakers, whether it's on the road or at home, because look, they were on the road at Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's a very good home crowd. And that was a team that was at full health. They had everybody healthy, even Chris Middleton this time. So the Lakers showed, like you said, a lot of moxie. They came back, and every blow that they took in the fourth overtime and double overtime, they withstood it and just kept chugging along. And, you know, I know that a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, this is the 9 seed. Why are we talking about the 9 seed? I see tendencies from this team that a lot of teams at the top would not want to face in the playoffs. And that's why we are talking about them.
What is their best case scenario? Again, let's not, yes, the best case scenario would be they would be the 6th seed and not in that play-in tournament. But when you look at where they are right now in the standings, and again, they're the 9th seed right now, but only 2 back of Phoenix. I think they have home. They have the tiebreaker against the Suns. What's best case scenario for them as you look at the way that the playoffs are unfolding, and also realizing that they have not fared well? And when I say they have not fared well, they've been swept on the season series by both the Denver Nuggets and the Sacramento Kings. What's the best case scenario for them right now?
I think getting into that 7-8 range, just because, look, I know that getting 6 would be crucial, but, you know, you'd obviously have to play a better team. And, and look, any playoff spot you're going to get right now, you're going to play a very good team. So, you know, if if Denver is at 2 and they get a 7, obviously I don't like that. But if it's OKC at 2 and the Lakers get 7, I love that matchup for them. So I know there's not a lot of room for them to watch what's going on at the top of the standings. They kind of got to worry about themselves. But if I was the Lakers, I would be saying, look, if we get into a scenario where we're in the 8th spot, right, and we're playing either Phoenix or Sacramento, if we lose, and that's a big possibility because it's the Kings, if we lose, we now have 2 chances to get in. So now they get to go play another game, right? So I think right now getting out of that 9-10 spot, because look, Houston's playing great basketball, and the Warriors just got a great win last night against Miami. So it looks like they kind of gave themselves a little bit of a cushion. So if you can ideally go either Dallas 7 or Phoenix 7 and Lakers 8 or flip-flop, and then you have Golden State and Houston fight it out for the 9-10. I think right now that's ideal just based off of how many games we have left, right? There's not many left for them to kind of leapfrog a lot of teams, but to have 2 chances in the play-in I think is very crucial, because I think if the Lakers get 2 chances to get into the play-in, they're getting into the playoffs regardless. Yeah. If they're in the 9-10, I'm a little bit more worried because anything can happen in that game. So getting into that 7-8 range and playing a team other than the Kings probably would be ideal.
The two games that we have tonight for the local teams, again, the Clippers heading to Philadelphia to play the 76ers, and then the Lakers on the second night of a back-to-back going to Memphis to play the Grizzlies. Obviously, you know, a favorable matchup for the Lakers. Switching gears to the Clippers now, you know, going up against a team that just handled them in Los Angeles. Now they go on the road. I mean, Grant, they have to figure out a way to get out of this rut, and I don't know if the road is the best place to do that. Now they are the 5 seed. We've talked about how tough that is in terms of – it's already a tough matchup. That 4-5 matchup with the Pelicans was going to be tough with them having home court. That matchup becomes infinitely harder to win when the Pelicans have home court. Did they have the first 2 games at home? They have a game 7 potentially at home. I guess short term, your thoughts on the game tonight against the Sixers, but just, you know, how crucial this stretch of games here will be for this team.
Yeah, it's going to be insanely crucial. And it's not just because, you know, they're fighting for a 4 or 5 spot, but because everyone behind them is playing so much better, right? I mean, the Suns, I know they had a bad loss, but they were playing better basketball. The Mavericks look like one of the best teams in the West right now, along with the Lakers, with the Rockets, and that top 4, top 3, I should say, because the Clippers are fluctuating between 4 and 5. But, you know, I just think that with this team, you have to just have good process. I know that, and look, every time I see now tweets from the great beat reporters that the Clippers have about, hey, they have a fully healthy team going into the next game, or it's a clean injury report going into Philadelphia. You know, if you were to tell me that maybe a year ago, I'd be, you know, saying hallelujah and praying to the Lord. But now I see that, I'm like, okay, great, but how are they going to play fully healthy? So it's just such a weird dynamic from 1 year to the next, because last year I was praying for a fully healthy roster. This year, I love that they're healthy, don't get me wrong, but there's more important things and bigger problems than them being healthy right now, which is so weird. Obviously, it's not weird because the Clippers kind of have this thing going every year around this time. Yeah. For them, look, transition defense, Ty Lue hit it right on the head. Transition defense, toughness, and being an offensive juggernaut, they have the ability to do so. That's what's so frustrating, Arash, is that we've seen them be elite at times to hang with some of the best teams, but we've also seen them play at a play-in level. So for them on this road trip, it's huge, not just for seeding, but just to kind of get their swag back. The last time they went on the road, it was a back-to-back in Portland. It wasn't a back-to-back, but 2 games in Portland, and they won both of them very convincingly. It was a great process. I would like to think that they have a little bit of mojo going against teams that beat them. The Sixers just put it to them last Sunday. They have the ability to get a get back on them. And I just think that when you go to the East Coast and when you're on the road, look, maybe going to the road is a better option for them right now, because at home they've lost 5 in a row. And Ty Lue kind of joked around about that. But maybe going on the road can help them a little bit. I don't know.
To your point, the Clippers have lost 5 straight at home. They have lost 2 straight overall. They've lost 4 of their last 6 games. They now go on the road for the next 4 games. So I'm going to give you the next 5. I'm going to loop in their first game back off the road trip, which generally, and I don't know why, is always hard for a team to win. But anyway, so beginning tonight at Philadelphia, Friday at Orlando, Sunday, March 31st at the Charlotte Hornets, Tuesday, April 2nd at the Sacramento Kings, and then they come back home Thursday, April 4th against the Denver Nuggets. Five games there. What is your prediction? Not what you'd like them to be, but what do you realistically have them going during this next five-game stretch?
You know what? I'm going to say 2-3. I think they'll go 2-3. I think they will beat Philadelphia. I think that they'll just get up for that game. They came off of two bad losses.
Yeah.
Orlando's a very good basketball team. They are fourth or fifth in the East right now. They've had an excellent year. They've already secured a postseason berth. I think the Orlando Magic are going to beat the Clippers. They have great size. They have a very young roster. They have the ability to get up and down the floor. That gives the Clippers problems, as I've said all year. Then you go to Charlotte. Charlotte, I think they'll beat. That's going to be their second win. But then I think they lose to Denver, obviously. I think just Denver's a class above. Look, that's going to be a very highly touted game. A lot of people are going to have their eyes on that one. And, you know, I think all the headlines around it are going to be, oh, is this a conference finals preview? Is this a second round preview? I'm going to tell you no for now, and let's just wait and see what happens with this game. And honestly, Arash, I'd really like to see how the Clippers get up for that Denver game, because that is going to be like their first real test. I know they've played some really good teams, but that is the first time you're going to play like a solidified contender in a little bit, and you're going to be at home. So I think that for the Clippers, if they can get up for that game and maybe even make it close, maybe you'll give me a little bit of hope, because that just lets me know that they can flip a switch. But if they don't, then it just kind of solidifies everything that we've been saying over the past week and a half about them.
You've talked about Houston a couple of times, and I think it's important to note, because I think some people kind of just maybe focus on their own teams or playoff teams. For a while, we thought that, you know, listen, the teams that are in the play-in are kind of secure. Mm-hmm. For a while, we were like, well, the Jazz isn't going to catch them. Well, forget about the Jazz. The Jazz are done. Houston is right now just one game back of Golden State for that 10th seed in that play-in tournament. What do you think are the chances that the Golden State Warriors, and again, I don't think the Lakers are in danger of not being in the play-in, but right now, as we sit here today, Wednesday, the Golden State Warriors are 37-34. The Houston Rockets are 36-35. Again, one game separates them. What do you think the chances are that it's the Houston Rockets in that 10th seed and the Golden State Warriors are not even in the play-in tournament?
Wow, that would be something else. I think it's a pretty decent chance, honestly. The Rockets have a favorable schedule. They do play the Clippers in the last game of the season. I do know that. But the Rockets have all year been a top 10 defensive rated team. And look, Ime Udoka, I know there's been a lot of talk about him. He has done a fantastic job with this team. I mean, especially with Alperen Sengun being out, he's been out for a couple weeks now. And ever since he went out, they've kind of picked it up. Jalen Green has been playing at, honestly, an all-star level with the way he's playing. He's finally blossomed into the player that I kind of thought he could be on a consistent basis. The Rockets have got a lot going for them. They have, obviously, now they added veterans and Dylan Brooks, Jock Landale, Fred VanVleet. So they have a good team. I always thought that they could probably compete for one of those play-in spots. But to see them go on a streak like this right now, it's scary for the Warriors, because the Warriors, you know, besides last night's win against the Heat where they obliterated the Heat and Klay Thompson went for 28. They have not been playing good basketball. And that's the team in the Warriors. Yes, I know they have a lot of experience. I know they won the title a few years ago, but that's an older team, right? The Rockets are a young, hungry team. Ime Udoka is a hungry, motivated coach to get back to the play-in or a postseason spot. So this is going to be a fun last 10 games. At least, Arash, we can say that it's going to be entertaining for that 10 spot, right? You know, a few weeks ago, we would have said, oh, well, it's going to be the Warriors and Lakers in the 9-10. Now, at least we have some competition, right? The Rockets have been playing excellent, excellent basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you really find out how important coaching is. And with Stipe, it was like, would he get another chance? And again, he got it super fast. And I think people around the league knew how talented he was as a coach. So we'll see how Houston does there in terms of, you know, if they can get up into that 10 seed, it'd be an amazing story if the Golden State Warriors don't even get into the play-in tournament. Yeah. And then switching gears real quick before we head to break, the Eastern Conference, I mean, despite the fact that the Celtics kind of didn't close out well in the fourth quarter, the Milwaukee Bucks are the 2 seed, but they are 11 games back right now of them. When you look at the East, again, not much drama there. Like just even with the play-in tournament, for example, you know, the Brooklyn Nets are six and a half back of the 10-seeded Hawks. So, you know, not too much drama there. What are your thoughts on the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think the Eastern Conference is almost set. And maybe you can look at the 3 through 5 flip-flopping. That's the Cavs, the Knicks, and the Magic. But, you know, obviously the Celtics are the class of that conference. They're 11 up. They've already secured the number one seed, which is actually crazy. There's, I think, 11 games to go and they're 11 up with tiebreakers. So, they've clinched already. The Bucks, look, they just had an awful loss to the Lakers. And that's a lot of the issues that people have with the Bucks is that, you know, we know about Doc Rivers' teams. We know about how he coaches teams in the playoffs. And that's, you know, a lot of the concern with them, the defense is a concern as well. And they gave up a lot of points in that 4th through 2nd overtime to the Lakers. So I don't know what we'll see from them. In terms of the play-in, it's going to be a mess. You have the Heat and the Sixers, which is honestly a great matchup if I'm just looking at it. But Bulls, Hawks, I like the Bulls in that one. I think the Bulls are actually going to be a little bit of a tough out, even if they win that game and go to the 7-8. The Pacers, obviously we know how good they are on offense. So the Eastern Conference, it's still going to be a very fun playoff, but just not as jumbled up and exciting as I think the Western Conference. But there is still a lot of talent in there, and I'm really excited to see teams like Orlando, like Indiana, and like Chicago kind of make a little bit of noise in the postseason. So, yes, the East is a little bit settled, but it's still going to be pretty fun, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and just look at a year ago. I think we all thought, you know, the Celtics would be back in the NBA Finals, and the Miami Heat go from the 8th seed all the way to the finals. So you never know how things will play out. Mm-hmm. Matchups are obviously a big part of it too. Right. So we'll, you know, listen, I'm not a lot of drama in the East, but we'll see how they do when we get into the postseason. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dodgers and the Angels finally closing out spring training as we get ready for the beginning of the regular season. So we'll talk about that when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment, or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline, 310-400-0340. All right, Grant. The Los Angeles Dodgers, and I guess we can call them the Los Angeles Angels, finished up the spring training last night at the Big A. The Angels actually took the last 2 games of the freeway series. Listen, it's spring training. These games don't count, all that good stuff. And for the Dodgers, I mean, there was a lot more pressing things that they were thinking about in terms of Shohei Ohtani. You know, Shohei had a press conference prior to the game on Monday. The media attention continued last night on Tuesday. no doubt that'll be the case as we go into the first home game of home regular season game on Thursday. General thoughts on the Dodgers and the Angels freeway series to wrap up spring training.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Dodgers, it was a little bit of just a relaxation kind of series. They went to Korea and played meaningful baseball and came back. And, you know, I know the full lineup was out there, but, you know, I think they just took it a little bit easier. It just seemed like they were just going through the motions. Arash, something I wanted to point out is that I think the Dodgers have an issue at shortstop. I think they need to acquire a shortstop or play a natural shortstop, because Mookie Betts in the game last night, he had a few plays in one inning where he just fell apart. He couldn't get a ground ball in the backhand. He kind of fumbled one, kind of to his right, that a normal shortstop makes, you know, a normal major league shortstop that has played there for his entire career makes. And I know that it's Mookie Betts. I understand people, you know, saying, oh, well, it's Mookie Betts, he can do anything. Well, he's a very dynamic athlete, but there's a reason why shortstops are shortstops and second baseman are second baseman and right fielders are right fielders. There's only a select few amount of guys that can play three positions. Like Mookie Betts, I give him a lot of credit. He can play an excellent second base. He can play an excellent right field, like gold glove level. I think shortstop for Mookie Betts is just a little bit out of the realm. I'm not saying that he can't do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I think that, and I'm not saying that Gavin Lux can do it either, because he's been a little bit shaky too. Miguel Rojas is a gold glove caliber shortstop, and I know that his bat is not there. You have to get all the bats that you need in a lineup. If I'm the Dodgers, and if this continues, because I've seen a little bit of a trend here of Mookie Betts, and I know that he did pretty well in Korea in terms of fielding ground balls and getting outs, but I've seen a little bit of a trend, not just in spring, but now here towards the later end of spring, of Mookie Betts being a little bit shaky at short. And, you know, there's a lot of talk over the offseason about Willy Adames being a human, and they wanted him and Josh Hader, right? They wanted both of those guys. I think that if I'm the Dodgers and it's a continuous issue and you need to keep all the bats that you need in the lineup, I think you make a swing at Willy Adames. He had 3 home runs in his last spring training game. We know how great of a talent he is on the offensive end. But defensively, he is a really good baseball player. I saw him play with the Rays a lot because I follow the Rays very closely, as much as the Dodgers. He is an excellent defender. I'm not going to say that I'm panicking. I'm not going to say that the sky is falling, but there are just some tendencies that I see from Mookie Betts at short. And look, I think he'll get a little bit better, but I think if you get Adames, you keep Gavin Lux at second, and then you move Mookie Betts to his primary position in right field, and then you kind of just move Jason Hayward in and out of the lineup, righty-lefty, move him to the left whenever you want to, have him be a platoon guy, I think that's the best option. Because if they can get a guy like Willy Adames with the treasure trove of prospects that the Dodgers have, I think that's a huge upgrade, not just offensively, but defensively too. So I'm not going to say, like I said, I'm not panicking yet, but it's just something I've noticed here in the later parts of spring.
Can you talk through the Dodgers' decision to do this again? I mean, this was something that happened during spring training, something that had been talked about for a while. But when you talk about a team that the payroll of the Dodgers, where they have the best players, or they really go after the best at every single position, moving, to your point, a gold glove right fielder to a position that he's not traditionally played before, what was the thought process there?
I think the thought process was that nothing else worked, right? Gavin, and it's true though, because last year Gavin Lux went down with a torn ACL, right? And that kind of shook everything up, because he was projected to be the starting shortstop, and you lost Corey Seager, you lost Trey Turner, so he's next in line. He's going to be the next one of those guys. He tears his ACL, so they make a panic move, not really a panic move, but kind of a supplemental move, and bring in Miguel Rojas. And Miguel Rojas was an excellent defender last year. His offense was the main issue, right? He was not up to par of a Gavin Lux or a Trey Turner or a Corey Seager, obviously. This year, you get Gavin Lux back, but hey, Miguel Rojas is still on the team. And now you have Mookie Betts in there, where he played a lot of second base last year. He moved around a lot. And you sign Jason Hayward back. You get another outfield in Teoscar Hernandez. So you added but you didn't subtract much. You just kept adding on. You added Teoscar, you added Gavin Lux, and now Mookie Betts goes back to the infield. So their decision was, okay, let's kind of play it out and see how Gavin Lux looks at shortstop coming off of that injury. And he did not look that great, right? His arm was not up to par. His fielding, he made a lot of errors. So they said, okay, well, let's just move him back to second base and see how he works there. Again, still a little bit shaky, but now you have Jason Heyward at right. You had Mookie Betts at second base. Where are you going to put Mookie Betts? And Mookie Betts did play a little bit of shortstop last year in a few different instances, but he wasn't the main guy. So yeah. They said, okay, well, we saw a few times that he can probably handle himself. Let's try it out. And that was kind of the decision. Now they're kind of at the last resort option. And it looks like, Arash, they're going to stick with it for the opening part of the season. I'm not sure if, you know, obviously the Dodgers have a lot of talent in terms of depth where they can even throw Chris Taylor there, Kike Hernandez at short. They have a lot of options that they can throw there, but no like mainstay guy that can probably be there 162 games or 150 games, if we're being realistic, at that position. So Mookie Betts, yes, like I said before, he's such a dynamic athlete to where, yeah, he can work there maybe for a game or two or fill in if some guys are hurt. But I just think that long term, Mookie Betts is such an excellent outfielder with a great arm and such a great second baseman that I think he would just be more natural there. And you could find somebody else to supplement that spot or kind of shore up that spot. If you're really going all in for this team and you really want to win a World Series, I think you have to put the best players at each position. And I'm not just saying you'll go get the best players, but I'm saying just judging off of what you see on a day-to-day basis or on a game-to-game basis, put the best shortstop at shortstop. Put the best right fielder in right field. Don't try to experiment with a bunch of different things. I understand it's a long season. You're going to experiment. Guys are going to be at different positions. But for a guy like Mookie Betts, where we kind of know how great he is in right field and at second base, I say just leave him there and let him get comfortable there. And you can throw Kike Hernandez, who's a pretty good shortstop over there, throw Miguel Rojas in there a little bit, throw Chris Taylor over there a little bit. Heck, even throw Gavin Lux over there a little bit, have him kind of, you know, find his way a little bit. So I'm not a big fan of Mookie Betts at short. I'm really not. And the experiment has gone a little bit shaky as of yet, but I just think their decision, Arash, was, hey, we kind of have to because we tried both other options.
Your thoughts now as the Dodgers head into, and again, I'm going to call it opening day because it's going to feel right. It wasn't 3 o'clock in the morning in Seoul, South Korea. I mean, that this is, you know, 1 p.m., Chavez Ravine, Dodger Stadium will be packed, St. Louis Cardinals. It's going to be great. Is the problem, I don't even want to call it a problem yet because we'll see how the Shohei Ohtani situation plays out. Does that have, do you think that there's a cloud lingering over the team this season? Again, he said what he said, and I do give him credit that it was a 12-minute statement. It wasn't something that was released. I actually did appreciate that. I know that there was a lot of people, and I backtracked even on what I initially said, where, listen, if he's not going to take any questions, just put out a statement, but it meant something that he sat there for, you know, 12 to 15 minutes, read his statement. You know, there's no doubt that it was, you know, he had some help there because it is a ongoing investigation. But I have no doubt, by the way, the more and more that I think about it, the more and more that I talk to different attorneys. By the way, I did not know this. I know his current attorney now. So, okay. You know, it's one of those things where my two cents is this is a live investigation, not only Major League Baseball. That's one thing. This is a federal investigation. This is an IRS investigation. There is no way that they're going to put Shohei Ohtani out there to lie in public when this is being investigated to that extent. And they're not going to put him in danger of, you know, going into jail or something like that. And again, worst case scenario for me is that he maybe knowingly helped his friend here. That, again, in talking to different legal people, like this is a first time offense for him. You know, there's enough of a safeguard here where I think he'll be fine. I think at the end of the day, when this all comes out, you know, he didn't bet on sports. He didn't bet on baseball. He wasn't a part of this. So I don't think that there's a suspension. I don't think there's a fine. I don't think there's anything there. That being said, we don't know that yet. You know, how much of a cloud do you think the Shohei situation will be as the team goes into the regular season, at least here in the U.S. on Thursday?
Yeah, I think to begin the season, it's probably going to be a little bit of a distraction just because everyone's going to be asking about it. Everyone's going to be talking about it because, you know, during the latter parts of spring and the early part of the season, there's not really much else to talk about, right? I mean, you're not going to talk about prospects as the main headline. You're not going to talk about a lot of things at the late part of spring. That's why it's such a big issue now. I guarantee you, Arash, this is that this investigation will be, go on months. This is going to be a months-long investigation because there's a lot of things to sort through. There's a lot of things they have to look at. I think by June or July, we're going to be more focused on the pennant races and the All-Star break and how the Dodgers are doing rather than this cloud of the Ohtani investigation. Because once baseball gets in full swing, there's so much to talk about on a game-to-game basis or on a day-to-day basis because they're playing every day. You know, we're going to be talking about upstart teams, teams that have surprised. We're going to be talking about, oh, look at how great he looks. Look at how the Dodgers are playing. You know, we're going to be talking about how Juan Soto and Aaron Judge are looking in New York. There's just so much more to talk about when the season gets going that I think it's going to take a little bit of a backseat. And especially with, you know, reporters and journalists, they have to get recaps out. They have to ask questions about the games. They have to cover the actual games. So there's not going to be as much reporting on the investigation. There's going to be more reporting on the games that are being played, the plays that are being made. So I think that it's going to be a little bit of a cloud to begin just because we kind of got to get in the flow of things. But by June or July and August, I don't expect this to be any sort of issue. I don't expect it to be clouded over the team at all. I think that we're just going to go about this as a regular season and kind of when the final investigation comes out, then we'll probably hear it kick up again. But once the season gets going and we're in the thick of June and July where we've played half of a season already, you know, people are going to just forget about this investigation. They're going to be saying, oh my God, that Ohtani has 25 home runs. Like, this is crazy or whatever he has. So yes, it's probably going to be a cloud, but the team already has addressed it and said, look, we're focused on winning games. You know, we're focused on the season. Obviously, they have to say that, but I think this team is just ready to move past it and focus on winning games because, look, that's the Dodgers' main issue right now is winning baseball games and winning in October. So their focus looks like it's set, and I think that this investigation is going to dwindle down a lot, both on social media, both amongst reporting, and on the national headlines for now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a lingering thing at the beginning of the season. But to your point, if the investigation drags on and if there's nothing more that Shohei can do, and if he's doing amazing things on the field, it's going to be a subplot. It's going to be something that's kind of talked about, but, you know, it won't be the headline. And so, but listen, if you're the Dodgers and if you're Shohei and if you believe what he's saying is true, I mean, you want this to get sorted out as quickly as you possibly can and move on from it. So, you know, the quicker, the better for them. I agree with you. I don't think it's something that will be done within a couple of weeks. It's more likely within a couple of months. Wanted to get your thoughts also. The NFL owners got together in Orlando to talk about rule changes. Perhaps two of the biggest was the hip tackle, which I mean, yeah. It's just like, you know, I mean, so many defenders came out basically saying, you know, this is sort of like one step closer to flag football. And as much as I want to push back, like, they're not wrong. Like, at the end of the day, if you could tackle someone, like, around their hips, like, you should be able to do that. And again, we'll see how the league adjusts to this rule. You know, by the way, that is going to be a big point of discussion if a defender makes an amazing tackle as a player goes in for a touchdown and they get flagged because it was a hip tackle. I mean, the number of fans that are going to lose their minds, but also, and this has been trending for in this direction for quite some time, Grant, is that basically they've eliminated the onside kick and eliminated kickoff. If you are going to do an onside kick, you basically have to announce you're doing the onside kick. So there's no surprise onside kick, but also kickoff. I mean, they've really done it to the point We're moving the lineup for kickoffs. And, you know, we're just going to get 99% of touchbacks. And so your thoughts there on those two new, or at least a couple of new rules?
I don't really like the hip drop tackle being banned, because how are you supposed to tackle a guy that's running away from you if you're the defender from behind now? I mean, Are you going to try to trip him up? Are you going to go for his knees now? Now you're going to have an issue with a lot of guys getting knee injuries, because you're going to have to do it that way. You're going to have to take a low blow to the knee as opposed to just being wrapped up and taken down from behind. So, like you said, Arash, it's going to be a talking point. I feel like every year we have one rule that kind of is an outrage. Yeah. I remember when the pass interference was able to be reviewed and everyone was up in arms about that, and then they took that away. This is honestly a fundamental rule of football, and I know that there's been a slew of injuries regarding this injury or regarding this type of tackle, but it's just a natural motion of trying to tackle a football player, especially with how great these guys are. What it's going to lead to, though, is a lot of the running backs that were already elite and a lot of these guys that were kind of middling to be even better than they were. Derrick Henry's going to benefit from this. Christian McCaffrey's going to benefit from this. Kyren Williams is going to benefit from this. There are a lot of players that are going to benefit from this and see their stats just shoot up, because, you know, now defenders are going to have to find another way to tackle them. So it's going to be very weird to see how they implement it. In terms of the hybrid kickoff, that is another weird one. I know we saw it in, what was it, the XFL? I think it was the X.
Yes, it was the XFL.
And the XFL, I mean, it was pretty cool to see. So the kickoff start line is going to be at the 40. They're going to have the opposing team have the setup zone around the 30. And then there's a landing zone, which is where the one player, two players that are going to catch the ball or let it roll into the end zone, make their decision. So it's going to be 25 yards from the spot of the kick. I encourage everyone to go look at some replays of the XFL setup just to see. I mean, it could be kind of cool, but like you said, Arash, it's going to ultimately result in a lot of touchbacks, a lot of guys just letting the ball roll, a lot of, you know, just honestly, I think we're trending towards just not even having a kickoff. Let's just do something else. I don't know how they're going to do that, but it is a little bit sad to see the kickoff go, because that's like a really big part of my childhood and upbringing with football. Like the opening kickoff during the Super Bowl with all the cameras flashing, and you're still going to have that, but you're not going to have a guy like Devin Hester return it for 100 yards. You're not going to have these exciting returns anymore. Obviously, the guys are going to score, but the kickoff, I mean, there's so many great moments throughout history of kickoffs being returned and, you know, 100-plus yard returns. Obviously, there's a lot of injuries due to that, and that's kind of why they changed it, because we were seeing just an influx of injuries regarding the kickoff. But it is a little bit sad to see it go, just because, you know, I grew up regular football being like that and seeing the Super Bowl kickoff, you know, and it was just it's kind of a nostalgia thing. But I'm always open to new things, so I'm curious to see how they do this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you talk about nostalgia, you know, I think of covering, you know, my first Super Bowl that I covered in person was the Colts and the Bears, and Devin Hester returning a kickoff for a touchdown. And then I remember I think it was the Saints Colts Super Bowl surprise onside kick was the big turning point of those games. So listen, I mean, I hope that there's a way to kind of keep that. I get that, you know, this is done for the safety of players and to reduce concussions and high impact hits and things of that nature. I do think we're always going to have a kickoff. It is such a part of the sport in terms of just the way that we say kickoff time. You know, kickoff time. So, you know, while we have basically eliminated the kickoff return, I think we're going to have a kickoff. You know, the league dealt with this with PATs. You know, they pushed back the length of the point after attempt, just basically just to make it a little bit more exciting, or not a 100% PAT conversion rate. All right. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.